my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, to be broadcast on Wednesday, July 3rd, 2024, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. It will be episode 402. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, lovely Dr. Fran Storch, who is off to work again. She does that a lot. You know, she's still working. I'm not. Oh, well. That's the way it is. But I am, but I'm not. That's another story. Anyway, Bicycle Talk's a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening on Facebook Live, you can comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or you can just email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. God, the governor of New York just can't stay off my rant list here. Governor Hochul of New York. We're going to talk a little bit more about this when we get into the show. There's a few things to address here. Her congestion pricing flip really is causing a stir over New York, although the senators of New York are not reacting to it. That's another story. I'm not going to get into that today, but I will get into a few other things. Governor Hochul, pay attention. You had a good thing going. You know, from a bicycling standpoint, this is a brilliant idea. You really got to pay attention. You got to see what it is that's going to make your city grow and prosper. But that's it. I'm going to move on. I'll talk about more of it in the show. We'll get there. On a positive side, Biniam Girmay, or Girmay, however you want to say it. I think Girmay is the actual proper pronunciation on that. If you don't know who he is, you're going to know a little later on in the show. And if you do know who he is, how about that, huh? Pretty cool. Okay, I'm going to give you the teaser. All right, the teaser is he's the first African to win a stage in the Tour de France. He's also the first one to win a stage in the Giro d'Italia. So not often do we see a lot of participating people from Africa participating in the Grand Tours, but this guy's got it all. It's pretty cool. And anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that. And we're also going to talk later in the show more about the 2024 Tour de France, which is going on right now. And I had to break away from the Galibier, which is like happening today. And it's I love bike racing. I really do. And I'm loving this tour a whole lot. It just has a lot of action-packed moments in it already, and we're only on the fourth day. So, anyway, moving on. One more thing on my positive side. Has your city passed the bikeability tipping point? So get this. There's a whopping 183 U.S. cities have built enough bike-friendly streets that their residents just want more of them. Is yours one of them? And if not, what will it take to get there? Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about that in the show as we get deeper in. The Mechanical Minute and Ron's Cycling Tip of the Week. Okay, so sometimes I struggle to find something to fill in this category, but I did find this cool article from People for Bikes about where's a good city to ride my bike? The 2024 best places to bike. Now this goes to, I'm going to just jump right into this on the show. And let's see here, right here. Oh, stop that. Here we go. So, I want to just run through this whole, there it is. I knew it was up here somewhere. This is from People for Bikes, and it was an article that actually came out of Brain, Bicycle Retail and Industry News, that sent me in this direction. And People for Bikes has released its 2024 city rankings, evaluating more than 2,500 cities globally on how bike-friendly they are and the ranking of them by population. City Ratings is a data-driven program based on People for Bikes Bicycle Network analysis. Each city receives a score of 0 to 100 on a scale of 0 to 100. Those scoring the highest perform well across six categories: safe speeds, protected bike lanes, reallocated space for biking and walking, intersection treatments, network connections, and trusted data. So this is, let's see, I'm going to flip over to the next page here, and here we go. And so it kind of gives you an idea of the cities that are being progressive. Okay, now this is small cities, 50,000 people and under. Okay, Mackinac Island, Michigan. Oh, how about that? They scored a 96 or 99, excuse me. Provincetown, Massachusetts, our own little New England Provincetown. Very cool. 96 on that. Third place, Harbor Springs, Michigan, 92. Fourth place, Springdale, Utah, 89. Fifth place was Washburn, Wisconsin. Sixth was Fort Yates, North Dakota. North Dakota. Can you believe that? North Dakota. Now, I always forget about the Dakotas. Dakotas are kind of like, oh, yeah, those are states out there, right? Sorry if you're from North Dakota. But you have a top-ranking 50,000 or less population city for bicycling. That's very cool. Crested Butte, Colorado. I know Crested Butte. Yeah, 87 on that was the number. Blue Diamond, Nevada, 85. Murdoch, Nebraska was 84. And Sewanee, Tennessee was 83rd. Okay, now we go to medium cities. So the medium cities here, okay, this is not a surprise. Davis, California, top of the list, number at 78. Cambridge, Massachusetts at 72. That was a little bit of a surprise. So we got a couple of New England contenders in there. Berkeley, California at 71. Boulder, Colorado at 70. Corvallis, Oregon at 70. Ankeny, Iowa at 70. Ames, Iowa at 66. Iowa got some big scores there. Anchorage, Alaska, 64. Hoboken, I love that word. Hoboken, New Jersey, 62. And Grand Forks, North Dakota, coming in again in North Dakota. And at the in the top 10 for the 50,000 to 300,000 person population. Large cities. Okay, so large cities have to be over 300,000 people in the city to make a large city status. Number one on the list, again, Minneapolis, Minnesota. This always blows me away because Minneapolis, if you know the Midwest at all, and I don't know it real well, but I do know weather out there, and Minneapolis, St. Paul, it's like brutal winter like weather, like Chicago. Very cold, very windy. Just not a place that you would think would be a great place to ride a bike. It's the number one in the 300,000 plus population. Number one. Seattle, Washington at 65. San Francisco, California at 64. St. Paul, Minnesota, 61. Portland, Oregon at 59. Portland, Oregon, they used to be on the top. Portland, get busy. Got to get back up there again. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I would not have guessed that one. 58. New York City, New York, 56. And they were 7th. 8th was Washington, D.C. 9th was Denver, Colorado. And 10th was Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Yes, there is also an international city evaluation here. And once again, this is from peopleforbikes.org. If you're ever looking for interesting information about infrastructure policy, participation stories, all that, you can find it at peopleforbikes.org. I think it's a great little site. They're always giving me nice bits of information they can use on my show, so it's good. Number one in the world, best place for bicycling, The Hague in Netherlands. Brussels in Belgium comes in at number two. Number three, Paris, France. Paris is doing crazy good things right now. Maybe it's their Olympics influence. I'm not real sure, but they have dumped a ton of money into their infrastructure. Lyon, France. Utrecht, Netherlands. Once again, second one for the Netherlands. Hang on tight. Keep watching these fingers here. If you are watching, if you're listening, I have two fingers held up. after that, it's Leuven, Belgium. It's Munich, Germany in seventh place. In eighth, it's the Amsterdam, Netherlands. And in ninth, it's Almere, Netherlands. And in tenth, it's Eindhoven, Netherlands. Are you getting the drift here? If you like to ride your bike and you want to be safe riding your bike and have people that respect people on bicycles more than any other place in the world, time to move to the Netherlands. Just a point, that's all. I'm not saying you have to move to the Netherlands, but, you know. Anyway, we shall move forward from this point. I thought that was kind of a fun thing to talk about today, so I put it up on our information screen, and we shall move on here. And this has got to go all the way over here, because that's later on if we should ever have any moments of time to talk about it. Because right now I got so much to talk about here today. The Tour de France is on. If you're not watching the Tour de France, and I it's just really, really hard to stay away from it. I have to save the best for last, so I gotta wait. I gotta wait on this, and I will get to Tour de France. I will get there, and I'll get to highlights and wonderful things that are happening and all. But I gotta move back over here and talk about this congestion taxation thing that's going on in New York. So, in case you have not been paying attention, the governor of New York had a bill in front of her that she could have passed that would have added an extra tax for anyone who was going to be parking or driving their car into Midtown, New York City, Manhattan. And the outcome of that was that, yeah, it was going to cost a lot of money for people that were parking their cars there. The downside of it and the problem that people were having with it was that workers, people who were unable to afford that sort of thing, were going to be the ones who are going to be hurt the most from it, because they would you know, they've got to get to work. They've got to get in. They've got to get to work. This wasn't aimed at them. This was more aimed at the Wall Street folks and the folks that are just making obscene amounts of money that are driving into the city every day, probably in a town car, probably with a private driver, and not being taxed for it. So that was the aim, was to go more at the high earners and hit them with a little bit of tax to try to make them do something different. Maybe carpool. That's an interesting idea. Can you carpool in a town car? Anyway, take you and your top executives to work today in a carpool. Wouldn't that be a neat idea? Anyway, probably it'll never happen. The point is that you could have received an exemption if you were of low income, and that would have made a lot more sense. The other point is to take that money, okay, and put it into infrastructure rebuild and revival, and make it so that more people would be inclined to use a different transportation alternative to get to work, and one that's safe and it's on time and it's, you know, viable. So that money would get pushed back and help out people with lower incomes. And I doubt you're probably going to see a top executive sitting on subway, but, you know, things can happen. Anyway, that's optimistic. Or maybe that top exec could just be riding in on a protected bike lane. How about that for a great idea? Get to work, you're fresh, you're ready to go, you got your mind is opened up, your body feels good, your heart's pumping. What a great way to run a company, right? Well, anyway, as you know, I can dream. I can always dream. So let's talk a little bit more about Governor Hochul's congestion pricing flip. Okay. The delay of congestion pricing is not only bad morals and bad economics, it's bad politics. Okay. This came from Streets Blog, one of my favorite sites. I do love these guys. It's called streetsblogs.org. If you haven't paid attention to it yet, it's definitely something to take a look at if you're interested in changing our attitudes and concerns about transportation and everything else involved. It's just Streets Blog's a great place to go. I like to talk about this one a lot. They cover a lot of the major cities in the United States, and then just general policy, even national policy as far as that goes. So since Governor Hochul's June 6th announcement that she had killed the congestion pricing, Streets Blog reporters have posted more than 30 stories about the crisis from New York and Albany. But that level of intensity also requires support from their readers. So you should go to Streets Blog and check it out and support this site. It's a really good site. Governor Hochul's move to indefinitely pause congestion pricing will have a destructive consequence for transit riders and low-income New Yorkers of color, especially. That's what U.S. Representative Richie Torres told Streets Blog on Friday. The Bronx congressman unloaded on Hochul's abandonment of the tolls, saying that the irresponsible decision betrays the public's trust, hurts New York's standing with federal regulators and bondholders, and ultimately saddles working people with higher fares and worse service. Torres's statement directly contradicts Hochul's claim that she's called off the tolls June 30th, launch date for the sake of the working people. Yeah, right. Well, you know, sure, right. You don't want the working people to be paying those extra taxes. I get that. I totally get that. But give them a viable and affordable way to not use their vehicle, and make, you know, even if it's, I mean, there's a thousand ways to solve a problem, right? There's always a solution to a problem. And if she is finding that that is going to really hurt the working families of New York City, then give them free fare. Maybe if they make under $100,000 or whatever it is, I don't know what the price cap has to be, maybe they should just get a free fare pass with their driver's license or with their, you know, ID. What do you think about that, Governor Hochul? Think about it. You know, I mean, you're just beating the problem in the wrong direction. And anyway, that's, if I were king, Petal and Ron always has good I were king statements out there. And that would be what I would do. It would be very, very simple. You just give low-income people free passage on the subways. Boom. No problem. On the buses. Boom. No problem. On trains. Boom. No problem. Give them free. Give them to them for free, and charge the people that are congesting your streets, because those congested streets cost you money. They cost you money in people spending ridiculous amounts of time stuck in traffic. They cost you money in the fact that people can't get to the restaurants and the cafes and all the other things that are built in around your infrastructure that make your communities vibrant and alive. This isn't rocket science, okay? I'm not a rocket scientist. I'm not even a scientist. I'm just a casual observer who loves to talk about alternative ways of transporting people, and You know, my number one is always my bike, always. Number two is my feet. If I've got feet, I can walk, and that's good too. Make it safe for me. Make it so I don't have to worry about being hit by gigantic vehicles. Maybe there should be a gigantic vehicle tax also to go along with this to help solve part of this problem. Maybe if your vehicle weighs over, well, I'll throw mine in the loop here. We just looked at the tag of my car the other day because someone asked me, how much does that thing weigh anyway? Because I have an electric car. So my electric car is, because it has a battery, is heavy. And it's 4,700 pounds. Maybe anything over 6,000 pounds, which there are lots and lots and lots of them out there, should have an extra tax also. How about that? Because that vehicle is destroying infrastructure, destroying roads by the weight of the vehicle alone. And that money could be used to, build more bike lanes. I've always got an alternative, and it's always in my favor, of course. But that's why we're Bicycle Talk, and that's why we talk about bicycles and bicycle advocacy and all that other fun stuff. So anyway, so here we go. So this goes back to a congressman. This is a Bronx congressman, by the way. He's Richie Torres is his name. He said his statements directly contradict Hochul's claims that she called the tolls launch state for the sake of working people. I already did that. Perpetuating the divestment from the public transit will have perpetrating the disinvestment from public transit will have a disproportionate destructive impact on the lowest income communities of color who disproportionately depend on public transportation for their livelihoods, Torres says of the delay's impact on his constituents. He called Hochul's insistence Thursday that the MTA's capital program, that's their transportation, won't be jeopardized, but rather reprioritized, disingenuous, slamming the governor for potentially putting the fate of the MTA in the hands of, yeah, you know who, Donald Trump. I thought they threw Donald Trump out of New York. Anyway, maybe not yet. Federal officials have withheld final approvals for the toll in response to Hochul's announcement, but did reveal Friday that congestion pricing would have vast benefits. Nonetheless, the delay could leave a future Trump administration, yeah, we're a little worried here in the U.S., with the power to decide of the tolling program's fate. The governor is putting the fate of a congested pricing at the mercy of the presidential election. Don't politicize this. Why on earth would we put the fate of congestion pricing and public transit in the hands of a president whose sole purpose in life is to exact revenge on all of his enemies, which includes the state of New York? So, did I mention, and I probably, you know, I mean, I'm going to do this just because I'm a poll worker. Don't forget to vote this year. Please, please, please don't forget to vote. And I know I have a population of folks that are younger, that are not real happy with the political problems that are happening in this country, but you can't change it. You can't make things better for you riding your bicycle and transporting yourself with your feet by not voting. You have to vote. You gotta vote. Just a point, that's all. And yes, I am directly connected with my town's voting system. I've worked with them since 2007 now, and am looking at a possible advancement in my assignments with the town. I am going to be on the ballot this year for the Registrar of Voters. So anyway, that's a sidestep. My point is that you got to get out and vote. I know that I have a lot of people that are interested in listening to podcasts like this one, like Bicycle Talk and others. They tend to be younger. They tend to be very involved in use of the infrastructure in their cities. You know, they're in Chicago, they're in New York, they're in LA, they're in Portland, they're all over San Francisco, they're all over the United States, they're in Boston. And so if you don't vote, things will change. And so you really need to vote responsibly. I'm not telling you who to vote for. I'm just telling you, you should vote to your concerns. Anyway, moving forward. So this whole congestion pricing thing is just crazy. The governor's pause on the congestion pricing may be as erratic and chaotic as arbitrary and abrupt a decision that he has seen in the last 20 years of politics, creating a massive $15 billion hole in the MTA's capital plan at the end of the legislative session without a plan B, without so much as consulting anyone, including MTA, is irresponsible in the extreme. The state of New York is supposed to be responsible steward for our public institutions. Public transport for most among them. When it comes to the MTA, the state of New York is betraying the public trust. I see public transit as an issue of racial equality and racial justice. Perpetuating the disinvestment from public transit will have disproportionately destructive impact on the lowest income communities of color, who disproportionately depend on public transportation for their livelihood. So what she was saying about how this is going to really harm those folks of lower income, she's got it backwards. She's got it completely backwards. She could help them. I go back to my original suggestion, and that would be, if you have a low income situation and yet you're a working person and you need some sort of a subsidy for transportation, ride MTA for free and let the people who have expensive vehicles and expensive ways of transporting themselves into the city and are congesting your city, make them pay for it. It's not a terrible idea, is it? Anyway, it's a bicycle idea because, you know, If you repair your infrastructure, you continue to upgrade your trains, and you continue to make more and more city streets safe for bicycles, everything changes. The world gets better. It really does. And I know it's hard to believe, really hard to believe. But anyway, what can I say? Take a note from Bolivia. I'll let you do your own research on that one and see what you think about that one. But I listen to a lot of environmental podcasts and shows, and take a look at Bolivia, see what they're doing. It's interesting. Anyway, there's a middle ground, okay? The state of New York could sign the plan while pausing congestion pricing. By refusing to sign the plan, the governor is putting the fate of congestion pricing at the mercy of a presidential election. What if, you know, one person wins the election that is not for this sort of thing? That could be a real problem. So, you know, don't get political here, governor. Fix the problem. You got a simple solution sitting in front of you, one that will make you very popular amongst most people, believe it or not. I know it's hard to believe. So anyway, so there's this just has a potential to bring so much more money, $15 billion worth of capital investments in public transport, and basically will have no real impact on the riders, other than, unless you, of course, implement my program. But anyway, so we're going to move on. We're gonna leave this one alone. I've beaten this dead horse so many times, but it just drives me nuts when people in really high power have a really simple solution that will resolve a lot of problems for a lot of people, not to mention the health benefits, not to mention the physical fitness benefits, not to mention any of the other things that go along with riding your bicycle. But just open your eyes and pay attention. Or, as I like to put it, when I've done talks for towns and I've introduced myself at the beginning, I explain who I am, what my background is, and how I'm involved in bicycle advocacy, and that I look around the room and I go, I'm going to take a solid guess that most of you drove here today to come to this meeting. In which case, I'm going to also guess that most of you see transportation and everything around you from the windshield of your car. I'd like to remind you that I see everything from the handlebars of my bicycle. And once you do that, you will open your eyes to a grand new possibility of what you can do with bicycle transportation and infrastructure change. So, anyway, let's move on. So, the feds, they say, and this, again, coming from the same direction, the congestion pricing will be better than we even thought, and the pressure is now on the governor, of course. The Federal Highway FHW, well, anyway, it doesn't matter, a firm that tolls won't have an adverse impact on the environment, kicking it to Governor Hochul to determine what happens next. I think it will have, but anyway, here's what this would do, okay, just so you know. By changing the congestion pricing laws and how things go, traffic would be reduced by 17%. Trucks would be reduced by 55%. Okay? This is an... and, of course, we've got just so many other possible things. This would only be during a peak hour, okay? And the overnight toll of $375 would be $15 peak hour toll, overnight toll of $375. This just makes so much more sense. It really does. But anyway, so even the feds are affirming that the MTA's $15 toll to drive into Manhattan's Central Business District would be great for the environment and will reduce congestion by 17%, a finding that further isolates anti-toll Governor Hochul after a week of protests over her cancellation of congestion pricing. The reevaluation was the final step that was needed to take in order to see the adopted toll structure inside the EA's findings. It did that and more. So there's just a lot of things here. Vehicle volumes, data shown on the table, the percent increase, decrease of daily vehicles entering Manhattan relative to no action alternative. The final tolling scenarios would be down 15 to 20%, adopted toll structure would be down 17%. And auto journeys would go down from 5 to 11%. And, this is all pretty simple stuff. It makes a huge difference. And I'm not even going to talk about the fact that, you know, the automobile is one of the worst polluting machines on the planet still at this time. And that's not going to change overnight. So with all that pollution and me and my group of cronies who like to ride their bikes, we're not real healthy with your pollution. You know, we like having good, clean air to breathe. And so do our kids and probably eventually our grandkids and all. You know, this is, once again, you can change the world if everyone would just ride a bike. But I know it's not possible for everyone, but there it is. So even the federal government is behind this. This is a no-brainer. It really is. And now we're moving on to other public health issues that I wanted to bring up in the show today. How am I doing for time? We're doing okay. So here's a good one. America's traffic death epidemic is a public emergency. The Surgeon General should treat it like one. Yeah. So, you know, the Surgeon General gets involved in things that cause people to get ill and or die, right? That is kind of another standard thing that happens. And so this is an opinion, obviously. It is definitely an opinion as far as that goes. But traffic violence claims almost as many lives as gun violence. So why hasn't the Surgeon General declared it as a public health emergency? Because didn't gun violence just become a public health emergency? There we go. All right. So over the past 2 weeks, the Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, made two bold moves, advocating for warning labels on social media platforms and declaring gun violence as a public health crisis. He argues that emergencies require quick action, even with imperfect information, criticizes the failure to respond effectively to major societal harms. In both cases, Murthy cited past successes like seatbelts and airbags to emphasize the need for urgent action. While guns and social media are political lightning rods, though, an equally critical public health crisis lurks unnoticed. The more than 42,000 annual deaths from car crashes. And that, unfortunately, has yet to rank among the Surgeon General's official priorities. So, you know, this isn't all, you know, pedestrian and bicycle deaths. This is all deaths in motor vehicles, but 42,000 annual deaths. That number's gone up from a few years ago, and it had really kind of calmed down. I had talked about this probably a year or two ago on another show, and it showed how, you know, we had really started getting a handle on this, and it was probably because the safety features in the cars were getting better, so less people were dying when they were driving their cars, and so that was a definite bonus. But then all of a sudden we've had this well, I call it the what do I call it? the COVID insanity crush. And COVID hit and people started driving stupid. And the weirdest thing about it, and this was an evaluation that we made when we were riding our bikes, when COVID was alive and kicking and everyone was sealed up in their homes and apartments and wouldn't go anywhere and zoomed everything, we were out riding our bikes because there was nobody on the road. It was great. And it was probably the safest I've ever been on the road with my bicycle. And it was unbelievable. At that time, there were more people dying of high-speed car accidents than ever before, yet the roads that I was riding on were incredibly safe because there just weren't that many people out there on them. They were meeting with their work at home. They're basically working at home. That's what a lot of people ended up doing. They ended up working at home. They're the only people that were out on the roads were the essential workers, and that was basically it. And I got to tell you, the most polite people ever were out driving their cars during the early parts of COVID. And Fran and I both evaluated this. We thought it was amazing. I would get to an intersection where I did not have the right of way. I was just riding my bike up to an intersection. Cars would stop and let me go through. Where do you see that anymore? No, you don't. You really don't. So, you know, there, something happened. And then the big switch happened, and that was, okay, COVID's over, so we don't have to worry anymore, which by the way, it is not over. Sepp Kuss is still recovering from a COVID incident that he had, and he's not riding the Tour de France because of that. So we'll move on to the Tour de France here in just a few minutes. But COVID is not over, and it's definitely still there. But people got back in their vehicles, and they were angry, and they were contained, and they got aggressive, and they got weird. And then the cars all of a sudden had a... how do I put this? They came off of their diets. They fell off the diet wagon and they got enormous overnight. And all of a sudden, the roads are not quite the way they used to be. Got to be a little more careful out there. That's all. Just got to be more careful. You can still ride your bike. Just got to be careful. So anyway, this is a crisis. It is accelerating, and the Surgeon General should take a look at this, because from 2011 to 2023, motor vehicle deaths rose by over 33%, and pedestrian deaths surged by 77%. Enough said? Okay, good. Let's go to the Tour de France. I'm done. I got to go somewhere else. Okay, Tour de France. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. So first day of the Tour de France started just a few days ago over the weekend, and they started in Italy this year, which was kind of cool. It was in Florence, and, of course, they immediately headed towards France and went into big hills. And so it started out as a very hilly ride, hilly race, I should say, and, boy, what excitement. Just, you know, we got the top contenders coming in. It was, everyone was spotlighting on the UAE team, on the Visma team, and nobody was paying really, really close attention to others that were out there. So everybody's looking at Tadej Pogačar, Jonas Vingegaard, Primož Roglič, and Remco Evenepoel. I mean, everybody's watching them very, very carefully. And this is just, it is just, you know, things happen when this happens. So let me see if I can find this, because this was just such a cool thing. And I don't have the right site open here. So let's go here. Maybe it's here. So anyway, we had just this amazing thing happen. And this Frenchman by the name of Romain Bardet, he broke away. And he got in a breakaway. He stayed in the breakaway. It kept going. And it was his moment of glory. He brought a young rider from his team with him, and it was spectacular, because they broke away, they stayed away, it came down to the very end, and it was a they were getting caught, and they were getting really, like, any moment now caught, and they stayed away, and they stayed away to the finish line. The coolest thing about it was, so you got Romain Bardet, okay, who's, first of all, he's French. Great for a Frenchman to win the first Tour de France, first stage of the Tour de France, be in the yellow jersey. Great thing. But anyway, when he crossed the line, they were chatting back and forth the whole way, you know, because they're like, and I know what was going on. This young kid that was with him, he's 24 years old, and it's his first Tour de France. He's never been on the Tour before. He's away with a legend, okay, a guy who's done it multiple times. And this guy, and they're just chattering. They're going back. You could see Bardet talking to him the whole time. And I'm sure he was just saying, you just got to hold on to this. Keep this going. Keep this going. We're going to do this. We're going to pull this off. And I'm sure he was just coaching him the whole way. I would love to get I'd love to hear an interview, but I haven't seen anything yet to find out. But they're going back and forth with this thing, and you could see it. The kid just gave it his all. Bardet gave it his all, and they finished seconds in front of a finishing sprint that was coming in behind them. And when he crossed the line, Bardet threw his hands up in the air, but then took both his hands and pointed them over to the other rider as in, you know, thank you. You know, it was just cool. It's epic. It's Tour de France. It's bike racing. I love bike racing. Did I ever tell you I love bike racing? I guess you guys kind of know that by now if you listen to this. But yeah, it was a big, big deal. So that made all the news, of course. And it was a good thing. It was a totally good thing. Today they're going over the Galibier, and oh boy, I can hardly wait. I know what's going on. No spoiler alerts today. Not gonna do that. You will know by tomorrow. And there's just so much good stuff going on. Yeah, we've got an amazing tour in front of us. We've got some of the hottest teams out there. We've got people that show up out of nowhere and all of a sudden pull it off. We had a stage, where was it? Stage three, was it? Where is it? I know it's here. So on stage three, we had a rider, and his name is Biniam Girmay. And if you don't know who Biniam Girmay is, Biniam Girmay is from Africa, and he is the only African in the Tour de France. He won a stage of the Giro 2 years ago, and yesterday he won a stage in the Tour de France, and he's primarily known as a sprinter, and he took it. He got in the right place at the right time. He had two team members. He's on a very weak team. They're not real well known. He had two team riders up in the front pushing the pace. There were crashes, so he was in the right place at the right time, and he's going up against some very, very serious sprinters, and he snuck by, and it was so cool. It was just such a cool thing to say, to see. So anyway, I just couldn't help but, you know, I have to highlight this guy because he's cool. He's 24 years old. He was born on April 2nd, 2000, and he is from Asmara, Eritrea, I think is what they call it, Eritrea. So anyway, he discovered cycling from his cousin, and then he got involved in it in 2018 for his junior year, and when he became a triple junior cycling champion of Africa, winning road races, time trials, and team time trial, he also won the first stage of the Abel Thymister Stavelot, beating out favorite Remco Evenepoel. Right? So he's something. And here he comes. And it was just, it's just really, really fun to watch. So he has developed. He went through a couple of different teams. He finished second on stage one in the Giro to Matthew Vanderpoel in an uphill sprint. I mean, this guy's got it. He's got it. He's hot. And he began his 2023 season racing in Spain and had his first win of the year on stage one of the Vuelta La Comunitat Valenciana. After a lack of results in the spring, he won the second stage of the Tour de Suisse, outsprinting Arnaud Démare and Wout van Aert. He entered his first Tour de France in 2023 as a team leader, placing third in a sprint finish on stage seven. So here we go. He starts the 2024 season at the Tour Down Under, and he finished second in the points classification. A week later, he took his first victory at the Surf Coast Classic. He was announced as the team leader for Intermarché Wanté for the 2024 Giro d'Italia. He completed three stages before crashing on a rainy fourth day. Lots of people got hurt. He had a hip injury, was unable to return to racing to 10 days later. And late in May, he won the Circuit Franco-Belge in a sprint. And he rode the Tour de France again in 2024 and won the third stage in a bunch sprint. He became the first Black African to win a stage at the Tour. Bravo. Bravo, young man. Good thing. So anyway, wanted to highlight him, wanted to talk about him a little bit. I think that's cool. It's just, there's so many stories going on in the Tour right now. The big guys are still there. It's still a very, could be anyone's race. Jonas Vingegaard, back from a nasty, nasty crash. I mean, just horrible crash. And, you know, just like Tadej Pogačar was last year. And he had come back from a horrible, horrible crash. So, you know, they were head to head with one another on the second stage? I can't even remember now. Everything's kind of a blur. The second stage, there was a really, really sharp climb at the end. Definitely a Pogačar climb. Very steep. Very good for Pogačar because he's so explosive. He can go so hard. And he did, and Jonas stayed on his wheel. And that was not expected. Now, it did enable him to get the yellow jersey on his back, and that was a good thing, but yesterday he lost it to Carapaz. It changes around a lot right now until things get settled out. I think there's going to be another change today. We've had three jersey changes in the first three days, and this is the fourth day. So we'll see what happens. But it's just there's some good solid stuff. The race today it's going over the Galibier. It's just, you know, it's a classic. It's an absolute classic. They're now coming out of Italy and going into France. So this is the beginning of that, and then stage five, which will be tomorrow, that will be July 3rd. We've got it starts in the Alps at the hub city of Saint Jean de Maurien, but it will be a day for the sprinters because it is going to eventually work into a flat stage, and then stage six is an extremely flat stage. Now, there's an interesting thing about this race. There are two time trials in this race. The first one is 25 kilometers. I believe the last one is 34 kilometers. And the last one is, because there is no Champs-Élysées, there is no finish on Champs-Élysées in Paris because of the Olympics this year, there is going to be a last day time trial. This goes way back to, if you're a big time bike race fan and you've been following this for as long as I have, Greg LeMond won the Tour de France on a last day time trial stage, or it's probably a next to last day at that year because they've always finished in Paris. But anything can happen, and you know who, as much as Vingegaard is coming off of an injury and Tadej Pogačar is coming off of a win from the Giro and he is primed to do the double. He wants to win the Tour de France and also the Giro in the same year, something that does not happen very often. You become a legend when you go to that status. That, not that he's not a legend already, but that's what he wants. Vingegaard can time trial, and he out-time trialed the daylights out of him last year in the Tour de France. So, who knows? It's going to be a fun race. It's going to be a real fun race. Hopefully, everyone stays upright. Rubber side down, wind at your back, you know, that fun stuff. No sliding on the pavement, please, especially our top GC riders. We want to be super careful about that. They were... I'm gonna give you a slight highlight here. It's not a spoiler alert, but as they were going down the Galibier today, the roads were wet because it was snow capped at the top. So there's water all over the roads. I'm not telling you anymore. You should watch it. If you are unable to watch it, or if you're not aware of how to watch it, it is available on Peacock. I'm not an advocate for any particular stations or streaming services or anything, but I am just letting you know of where it is. So for me, in my world, it's worth a month's subscription just to watch the tour, and then you could just cancel it. It doesn't matter. You know, that's the beauty of streaming now. You can actually do things like that. So, you know, live a little. You know, maybe you don't go to Starbucks one day. Oh, sorry. That's another promotion, isn't it? Terrible. Anyway, you know, you can give up that expensive cup of, let's put it this way, you can give up that expensive cup of coffee and buy a streaming service for a month, and you get to see exactly, you know, what's going on with the Tour de France this year. Good stuff, man. Really, really good stuff. So I can't wait. We got three really young riders, because Remco Evenepoel is also in this, and Tom Pidcock is in this. I mean, there's just so many good riders. We've got a Jumbo team that is definitely or Visma team, I should say, a Visma team that is definitely hurting as far as team members go. They've had some misfortunes throughout the early part of the season, which is really too bad because they were the machine last year. This year, it looks like the UAE team is the machine, and that's who Tadej is riding for, and he's got a hell of a group behind him. They're really, really good, and so we'll see what happens. I'm going to move on. That's it. We'll talk more tour next week, I'm sure. I can't seem to get it out of my head, so let's go on to events. And the 2024 Quiet Corner Bike Tour is presented by the Thread City Cyclers on Sunday, July 28th. I forgot to mention that the E-Race Bike Tour is coming up in, I think, 2 weeks, something like that. Same weekend as my Farm to Fork Fondo, so it's 12th or 13th, something like that. And that's a popular ride too. All these you can find on Bike Reg, of course. The Quiet Corner Classic I will highlight here a little bit just because it is my club ride. There's a 102, a 64, a 40, and a 20 mile road ride and an 18 mile gravel loop. And that will be June 28th and That will be July 28th, 2024. Excuse me. Let's see here. The 2024 Steeplechase Ride Walk, Saturday, August 17th. We've got a 20-mile ride, a 35-mile ride, a 62-mile ride, and a 5-mile fundraising walk. And also, in addition to last year's 18-mile gravel ride, we've got a 40-mile gravel route available, 90% dirt roads and trails. Cool stuff. Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series is coming up. We're up to 8 races now in the series. I'll have more information as we get closer to that time. So what's your feeling on that congestion pricing in New York City? I'll ask it again. I asked the last week too. Am I not seeing this clearly? Maybe the governor of New York's not seeing this clearly. I know she's not seeing it clearly, but I think that there's a big political push behind her that's making her make bad decisions. It's unfortunate. You're there to govern the people, not to govern some other person who has control over you. But anyway, so 2024. More miles, ride and commute to work or around town, better fitness, or simply enjoying the bike ride to take more by slowing down and smelling the roses. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active, our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and prices of gas and lack of places to safely ride and you know, get out and do something about it. Ride your bike instead. Ride it to work. Park your car or truck for a day. You just might surprise yourself. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Pedal and Ron, and you can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you want to contribute information to the show, you can reach me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down, the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. Save mine. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you for listening. I'll see you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!